Oak Session number 13114, Reel 2.
Let me know all the stopping places you did from Takoradi to Khartoum.
Yes, rather. Well, so it was Takoradi, Lagos, Lagos, Kano, Kano, Maiduguri, El Janina, El Fasha, Khartoum, Wadi Halfa, Heliopolis. And on that last leg, I have a note in the logbook to say the Pilot Officer Chatfield force landed successfully by the Nile. Now, I happen to be actually leading this little formation from Wadi Halfa to Heliopolis, and I said to the chaps, if they had any problems, just start to waggle their wings alongside, and if they're having engine trouble, and we would radio and generally look after them. And Chatfield's never forgiven me, because when we arrived at Heliopolis, I looked round the circuit and he wasn't there. And I landed and said to the other chap, I said, well, where's Roy Chatfield? And he said, well, I don't know. And poor old Roy had, in fact, had an engine failure about an hour beforehand. And he said he could see me just sitting there gazing out into space, you know, not even looking anywhere. And although he was making frantic signs that his engine was malfunctioning, I never took the slightest bit of notice. Oh, chap. Yep. So, where were we? Yeah, so, anyway.
You're more furious now. You've arrived in Heliopolis. Now what happened?
Well, we were there for about a fortnight, and then I suppose we went down to the canal zone to Kasfarid, to a sort of holding point. And the hurricanes were serviced. And in about a fortnight, we were told to, three of us were told to pick up hurricanes, I forget from where, and take them up to the desert, to Benina, I think, near Benghazi.
This was about the end of 1940, is it?
No, this was 41, isn't it? Sorry to keep being so vague, but old men forget, you know. Where are we? Yes, we arrived at Heliopolis on March the 31st and 1941. That's right, and on the 5th of April, I led this little gang of three hurricanes up to reinforce the chaps in the desert. And I see how we picked the aeroplanes up at Amaria and went to Mersa Matu and from Mersa to El Adam. That's right. When we got to El Adam, there was a wild scene going on because the Germans had started to advance. And El Adam, as you probably know, is just outside Benghazi. And everybody was in a panic at El Adam, and they were actually burning some of the airplanes which were unserviceable, and they couldn't fly out. And a wing commander came out to me and he said, look, little fighter lady, you have exactly half an hour either to get out or burn your airplanes. So we didn't know anything about the desert, so we said, well, where should we go? He said, well, I don't know. He said, just follow the telegraph wires back towards the Delta. And I think there's an airfield, he said, somewhere over there on the left. Well, this is an extraordinary coincidence. We did just that. And we got off, and we ended up at this place called Bua Mood, three of us. and blow me down if the squadron at Boer Mood is my old pre-war squadron, 73. So, without any further ado, we joined 73, three of us.
They were on Hurricanes too.
They were on Hurricanes too, that's right. And I didn't say that, but yes, it was a bit of a confused period there. Well, very shortly after that, we found ourselves actually in Tobruk, operating out of Tobruk, which was then promptly cut off. So then we had a pretty hectic few days there. Some of the time we were strafing the enemy on the roads. Other times trying to deal with these dive bomber attempts. But by this time, of course, the Germans had brought up some fighter squadrons within range. So by the end of it, we took a terrible beating.
You were still flying the 8 Browning Hurricane Wave.
That's right. So I see on the 22nd of April, this is just about the end, we were over the far forward troops and we were attacked by 109s while we were trying to attack some dive bombers. I got chased back to over the harbour without my elevator controls, very nearly shot through. We got away with that, and then the next day I got shot down by one of these 109s. I had to jump out. And I jumped out rather low, and the parachute was swinging, and I broke a shoulder when I hit the ground. And persuaded one of the Australian army chaps. Luckily, I was inside the perimeter. He was about to finish me off with the butt end of his rifle that I was an Englishman and not a German. Because any Germans were shot down, of course, not the British. Get to do with the German. And again, I was terribly lucky because I was flown out in a Blenheim. Three days later, and eventually I went into hospital in Cairo, but the following day they tried the same stunt and flying out wounded, and the aeroplanes were shot down immediately. So pretty lucky stuff. So anyway, I came out of hospital. What did I do then? It was a lot of fun. My old flight commander in 73, before the war, a chap called Ian Schooler, by this time got a Tomahawk squadron, which was just forming. And I was in touch with him. And when I was operational again, he said, well, look, why don't you come as one of my flight commanders in 250 Squadron with these Tomahawks? And I thought, well, that's a good idea. So I joined this 250 Squadron and went back to the desert on Tomahawks, where we operated up until October, that's right. And in the... That's right, the October of 41, that's right, I was taken off for a rest again. and went down to the Sudan, to Gordon Street, another of these darned OTUs. So we're then instructing on hurricanes and tomahawks.
How did you find the tomahawk after the hurricane? How did it compare?
It was about the same. It was quite a nice. It had its limitations. It wasn't quite as good high up as the hurricane was. So we mostly used it low down, sort of under 18,000 feet. But its great thing was, of course, it had these two big 0.5 machine guns, you know, mounted up in the front. They were very effective.
So were they used for ground attack at all? Or
yes.
As well as interception?
Yeah. Yeah, it had two 0.5s firing through the prop. And four American Brownings in the wings. Yeah, it was a good little airplane.
Yeah. The Allison inline engines.
Ah, yes, the Allison wasn't a very reliable engine. In those days, largely, I think, because the British were brought up on a different system, you see, all our engines had automatic boost controls. In other words, you couldn't overboost the engine, whatever you did on a British aeroplane. You pushed the throttle fully forward. There was a capsule which limited it, but the Americans never went in for this. They said, no, you know, we'll teach the chaps not to overboost the engine. They watch the gauge. And, of course, a lot of our trainees have been trained under the flying British aeroplanes. And I think a lot of them were overboosted. That was really the trouble. But I, being engineering-minded, shall I say, was always very kind to machinery, and I never had any problem at all with my faithful Tomahawk.
The Kitty Hawks. Were a similar aeroplane, but mainly designed for bombing, weren't they?
No, the Kitty Hawk was a slightly bigger, better armed. It had terrific. It had six of these 0.5s. Oh no, it was a fighter, a very good one, very good ground attack aeroplane. They had a much bigger engine as well. And in the end, the last ones were things we call war hawks, which were Kitty Hawks fitted with Merlin engines, Packard Merlins. Built in America, and they were very, very, very good airplane. Anyway, we mustn't ramble on too much.
No, this is all interesting.
Yes, some of the sidelines are perhaps the most interesting thing. One of the most incredible things, can you believe, that at this Gordon Street OTU, they were so short of dual airplanes that one of them was a Wellesley bomber. Converted to
right. Tell me about the Wellesley.
Well, the only point I was going to make was the it was a pretty scratch OTU was this Gordon Street effort, and although it went out of use very shortly after I got there, they even had a Wellesley, can you believe, fitted up as a with a stick and rudder pedal in the back, so that you could give dual in it. But it was a kind of airy aeroplane, because your student would have been something like 30 feet ahead of you. We were at this OTU until for some reason, they decided I would be posted to Aden to counter a threat. Who by, I can't quite remember. It was the Italians, I suppose. And therefore, I was sent off to Nairobi with two other chaps to collect three Mohawks. Well, they were really virtually tomahawks with radial engines. Thing. And the idea was to pick them up in Nairobi, fly them up, then across into Aden, and so defend them, defend Aden. But it didn't go very well. For a start, I went sick for about a fortnight in Nairobi, partly through booze, I suppose. But anyway, eventually we assembled our little formation of three Mohawks, and led by a Lodestar, I think, we set out to fly them to Aden via Juba and Malakal. Again, we were lucky because that went quite well. And we, all three of us, got to Gordon's Tree okay.
What's the date of those?
That was January 42, it must be, wasn't it? It was January 42. Anyway, disaster very quickly hit us then, because these Mohawks are terribly unreliable, the engine. Nobody could ever discover why, because the same engine in a Hudson was perfectly reliable. But in a Mohawk, for some reason, it was always having problems with the oil system. So anyway, we set out for Asmara, flying from Khartoum to Asmara. And I can't remember exactly what happened. Anyway, I got Pierre Marshall force landed 100 miles east along the desert track between Castle, I think it was, and Asmara. I see landed by MOK. I can't. Don't remember doing that, but anyway, we had to obviously come back to Khartoum and send out a rescue party. Then the next day, the two of us, Smith, a chap called Smith and myself, set off, and Smith's engine failed just around about where Marshall's aeroplane was, so he managed to put down bite and dash it. About 50 minutes later, my oil pressure went and I turned back, and there were these two other airplanes, so I landed.
That was a consignment on the deck.
That's right. Whole consignment on the deck. Anyway, let me think now what happened. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what happened on that, I can't remember exactly. I have a feeling that after Marshall went down on the 25th, we flew him out by a Harvard and sent out a ground party. So the next day, when Smith and I forced landed beside his aeroplane, it wasn't very long before the ground party turned up. And they, I remember, took a bit out of one of the other aeroplanes, and I think the oil relief valve, and put it into my aeroplane. And I attempted a takeoff, but the terrain was pitted with sort of craters, extraordinary craters things, and I tried to line up on one of the vehicles and to guide my takeoff, but in doing so, I remember I forgot about one of the other aeroplanes standing out where I couldn't see it under the cowling. That's right. And as I took off, I hit the engine of this other aeroplane, which knocked one of my wheels back. Anyway, I got it back to Khartoum and crash-landed it okay. And eventually, I think they fixed the other two aeroplanes and they were brought back to... Oh, I know, yes. I can't remember now. Anyway, eventually, all I know is that we had two of these aeroplanes got to Aden. But it's all a bit of a... so long ago, it's hard to remember.
Was the Mohawk related to a naval aeroplane that we called the Martlet?
Not really, no. It was exactly the same as a Tomahawk with a radial engine. No, the...
the Martlet had a radial, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Didn't know it was the same engine. Anyway, I can see in my logbook here, I then, for some reason, took...
Did you stay in Aden with them to use them for their stated purpose?
Well, the trouble was, again, I don't... Just having a look. Yeah, in the end, we got to Aden. I took a Blenheim there for some reason. I can't think why. But I see in April, I've done three sorties in this wretched Mohawk in Aden. On the 5th, the 14th, and the 5th, 14th, and 15th of April, we flew this Mohawk. Then I know it went US, and I think the threat disappeared. So anyway, at that stage, they then decided that they would try and form an OTU, can you believe, at Sheikh Othman.
Where was that?
Sheikh Othman was a subsidiary airfield. The main airfield is at Cormacsa at Aden. Sheikh Othman was round the bay towards Little Aden. But I didn't participate that because nothing much happened while this OTU was trying to get underway. I didn't even fly with it because I was then posted back to Egypt, to the canal zone, to take over the test flight at 107MU for a chap called Waldo Prizon. So for the next year, from May 42 to about May 43, I was testing at this 107MU. That really was an extremely interesting period because one did one's own conversions. There was nobody to give you any sort of conversion. And we were flying anything from Kitty Hawks, Tomahawks to... Hudson's, Maryland, I see here, Baltimore's, Liberator, Marauders, you name it, we got them and flew them, which is rather fun because you never knew what was coming up next. And I see yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I see in 1 month in February 1943, out of, I suppose, a total of somewhere like 40, 50 hours flying in the month. Very little, really, because all the tests were pretty quick. There were 16 different types of aeroplane, including a 109G, I see here, a Hart, a Catalina, a Marauder, and a Liberator, and a Spitfire. So there was a terrific variety.
It was preparing you for your subsequent
yes.
aviating life. Can you recall any incidents in that time?
Oh, I suppose I had lots of them.
I mean, when you flew a Liberator, were you the only bloke on board, or did you have?
Oh, Lord, no. No, I had another one of my test flight chaps in the other seat. And I think one of the ground crew, engine fitter, because we weren't too certain about how the... because there were no instruction books, you see.
No.
So our engine handling was a bit uncertain, shall we say. So quite, the whole thing is absolutely ludicrous, really. But, I mean, we...
You didn't bend any.
We didn't bend it, and I remember, can't think why, later on, I flew that Marauder on some funny test, not the Liberator, to Petra. I'd always have yearned to see
Rose Red City.
I remember, I've got a picture of it, a very bad one taken from the left-hand side of my Liberator. I remember saying, well, come on this afternoon, we'll go and see if we can find Petra, and just boring off.
Across. You didn't land there.
Good God, no.
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 I was going to say, I was wondering where you did it.
No. We just, just flew over. I left, it was about 2 hours, I think, from Keswick. Just circled around and came back again. So it was quite extraordinary setup, really. So what else do I say about Keswick? Oh, all kinds of eerie things. One of the most ludicrous was they fitted two Vickers 6-pound cannons of some sort, huge cannons, under the belly of this bow fighter, on the instigation of somebody's brainwave, that it would be a useful thing to poop at submarines on the surface. And I think the idea came from a squadron that was at Edku, so I know Alexandra. Who asked for this to be done. Anyway, they fitted these huge guns. And I remember it had an ammunition drum which held 6 of these great shells. And delightfully, casually, when it was all fitted and ready to go, somebody said, well, you better take, you know, go up and see if it works. Well, it works, we do. Oh, we just button this... shoot it off in the Bitter Lake. I saw it into the air with this thing and came down over Kasserine and let fly into the Bitter Lake. And I think only about 4 or 5 shots fortunately went off. And that was terrific vibration. And it was practically overhead the camp when I fired it. So anyway, I came... spiral down and landed. Sure enough, all the mountings had broken on the guns. The structure hadn't been beefed up enough. But there was nobody about. And of course, I hadn't warned anybody. And of course, the whole camp, when they heard this terrible banging right above their heads and the cases falling out of the aeroplane, thought there was a raid on. So everybody had taken cover. But we finally got it right. We beefed up the structure and dispatched it to the squadron. And I remember meeting a chap sometime afterwards, and I said, have you done any good with that bow that we fixed up with the big cannons? Oh, he said, no, we never used it. The only chap to fire it, I don't know why we didn't, he said, was the CO. He said he got the armament chaps to take the shells out of some of the bullets out of some of the shell cases and fill them up with lead shot. And one night he went up and shot all the ducks on Lake Edgar with this thing. Because I remember he said we had to paddle out in dinghies to collect the corpses. Can you believe? After all that. What else exciting happened? Oh, the Marauder. Yeah, we had a very lucky do with the Marauder, which was the early ones had quite a high landing speed. They were rather short wings, and everybody was a little bit nervous of them. And the other thing about them was they had electric propellers on them, as a lot of the American airplanes did. And the props would run away on just after takeoff very often. So he got out an elaborate plan of always doing a little dummy run, first of all, to see whether the props were going to govern or not. Anyway, I think it was 14 Squadron. Yes, it was. 14 Squadron were equipped with them. And some wretched chap practicing evasive action after, I think they were carrying torpedoes or bombs for shipping strikes, was practicing taking violent evasive action after doing a run on a ship, and the fin collapsed. So it was a big scare, so they were all grounded, and the Grand Martin sent out a working party, and they did a modification on the fins. And we had a splendid chap called Mickey Vince, who was the Glen Martin representative, actually at the MU with us. And that's right. We'd flown the aeroplane on test. It was all right. And then they'd done this modification. And Mickey Vince said, "Oh, I'll come up with you just to make sure that